Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up over the next half hour, we talk to the Grand Hospitaller of the Order of Malta about the challenges facing the newly elected Grand Master. And as preparations are underway for Pope Benedict's pastoral visit to the U.S. in April, some people say he's already been sighted in the New York neighborhood of Harlem. But first, young people took center stage on Wednesday when, before his general audience, Pope Benedict greeted thousands of Italian students in St. Peter's Basilica. Lydia O'Kane has more.
Many of the students, waving yellow baseball caps and some wearing traditional regional dress, welcomed the Holy Father and listened as he told them that, in today's society marked by rapid and deep changes, young people who want to follow Christ need to work constantly on their spiritual formation and try to understand ever more fully the contents of the faith. This meeting of youth comes before the Pope presides over a penitential liturgy in St. Peter's Basilica for the youth of the Diocese of Rome on Thursday in preparation for the 23rd World Youth Day, which will be celebrated on Palm Sunday. After a short journey to the Paul VI Hall, Pope Benedict was greeted by a cross-section of people from all age groups who had come from near and far to be at Wednesday's audience. Continuing his catechesis on the Fathers of the Church, the Pope this week spoke about two great Christian writers from the Italian peninsula during the period after the fall of the Roman Empire in the West, Boethius and Cassiodorus.
Both were anxious to preserve the heritage of Greek and Roman learning, handed down through generations of Christian believers in the context of the Gothic culture that dominated Italy at the time. Boethius, born in Rome in 480, entered public life and became a senator, so he continued his philosophical and religious studies alongside his public responsibilities. Unjustly imprisoned and later executed by King Theodoric, he wrote his greatest philosophical work in prison, reflecting on the injustice of his situation in the light of biblical wisdom, literature, and classical authors. He concluded that true happiness lies in continuing to hope in God despite adversity. Indeed, harsh fortune helps us to distinguish true friends from false ones. There can be few greater consolations than that of true friendship. His contemporary Cassiodorus devoted much time and energy to promoting the monastic movement in the belief that monks were the people best pleased to preserve and hand on the heritage of classical Christian culture. We would do well to take note of his advice to them, meditate day and night on the law of the Lord, and always focus your attention upon Christ.
As always, Pope Benedict greeted all the pilgrims present in a number of languages, including English.
I am pleased to welcome the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors here today, including groups from England, Ireland, Japan, Australia, Scandinavia, and North America.
At the conclusion of the audience, the Holy Father imparted his apostolic blessing upon the faithful. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
An Englishman is once again at the helm of the world's oldest chivalric order. Fra Matthew Festing was elected the new Grand Master of the 900-year-old Order of the Knights of Malta in a secret ballot in Rome on Tuesday. Fra Festing, the 59-year-old former Grand Prior of England, replaces the order's first English Grand Master, Fra Andrew Berti, who passed away in February. Pope Benedict XVI was informed of Fra Festing's election before it was publicly announced on Tuesday. While the Catholic lay religious order, which established a hospital to care for pilgrims in Jerusalem almost 1,000 years ago, continues serving the needy with its worldwide network of humanitarian and medical aid. It is also a sovereign state holding observer status at the United Nations and diplomatic relations with 100 nations. Well, shortly after the elections on Tuesday, I went down to the Via Condotti headquarters of the Knights of Malta and spoke to the Grand Hospitaller of the Order, Albrecht von Boselager, about Frau Festing's election and what it is hoped he will bring to the Knights of Malta.
Matthew Festing has been for almost 20 years the Grand Prior of our priory in England, and during this time has taken part personally in many of our activities. So he has gone regularly to Lourdes with our pilgrimages, taking care of sick and handicapped people. He frequently went to different places on the Balkans after the war on the Balkans to help in our projects. So he is from many sides, has been very much involved in our mission from the Order of Malta and is experienced. And that's, I think, one of the reasons he was elected as Grand Master.
And how exactly do these elections take place?
There are about 50 electors, and they come from all over the world. And different groups of electors elect their representatives into what we call the Council Complete of State. So there are the members of the actual government of the order and delegates from the priories and associations. And they vote. And that's pretty similar to other religious orders or even in the conclave. There is no candidate, and it turns out during the votes, consequent votes, who will become the next Grand Master.
Once the new Grand Master takes the oath for his new office, the Pope is alerted that a new Grand Master has been selected. What is the relationship between the Order of Malta and the papacy?
The Order of Malta is a religious order. Its members are divided into three classes. And the first class have the three vows, like monks in other orders of celibacy, obedience, and poverty. So in that sense, it's a religious order. And therefore, we are, as an order, integral part of the Catholic Church, and of course, under the Pope. But the order has a double nature. It's also a sovereign entity of international law, and has an ambassador to the Holy See, and the Holy Father appoints the so-called Cardinalis Patronus, who one can say is the ambassador of the Holy Father to the order. So it's on one side a religious order, and on the other side, like a small state, a sovereign entity of international law.
Now, what will be the role of the new Grand Master in the Order of Malta in this third millennium? Where will he be taking it?
I'm not a prophet, but I think that he will provide for continuity regarding the development of the recent 20, 30 years. The order has had rather fast development of its outreach into the world and activities, and the activities have expanded enormously during the last 20 years. The new Grand Master has been involved in it, and I think this will continue under his leadership. I think one reason why he was elected is that he was quite successful in his priory in England to encourage new vocations to the first class. That's a concern in the order, that we are lacking vocations into the first class, and under his leadership of the Grand Priory of England, quite a number of new professed knights came into the order, and we hope that he can bring this experience in for the whole order.
And what exactly do the various orders do? For example, you're talking about this first order. They take special vows, but what are their duties, their obligations in the order?
They do not live in community, so they continue to live in the world, and as far as they don't have a special appointment of the order, they continue with their normal profession. But they, of course, live according to the vows they have pronounced, celibate, in poverty, and obedient to their superiors. The second, so-called second class, are members who normally are, or most of them are married, but they take a promise of obedience. And the members of the third class do not take any legally binding promise or commitment, but they commit themselves in their conscience to further the mission of the order and to take part in it.
In a moment when religious vocations have dwindled quite substantially over the past decades,
Do you think the Order of Malta offers something different for people who are seeking a new vocation in life?
We observe with gratitude an increasing attraction of our order for young people. We have really a partly fast-growing groups of young people under the roof of the order, carrying out the mission of the order in serving the sick and the poor, and also in, let's say, looking for a deeper spirituality and a more religiously driven life. That does not say, of course, automatically that they once will take the three vows. But we hope that this almost 1,000-year-old mission of the order, which never ceased to attract people, will also attract people in the third millennium.
How does the order now work throughout the world to provide services to in healthcare, for example?
It depends very much on the area of the world or the countries. So it's very different from what we do, for instance, in England, France, or Germany, or in Africa or South America. So in Europe, we run hospitals, homes for the elderly, specialized homes for handicapped people, and we have many volunteer corps. So we have about 80,000 permanent volunteers who traditionally were trained in first aid and provided ambulance services and were active in civil protection and disaster relief. Now they are taking over more and more also, let's say, social tasks like visiting lonely people, helping the homeless, volunteer services for terminal ill people at home, and so on. So the mission is widening. In third world countries, especially in Africa, we have basic healthcare programs. We fight infectious diseases like malaria, lepra, sleeping sickness. We have a special program in Congo to care for raped women, as rape has become an intended means of war, especially in eastern Congo and now in Kenya, unfortunately. So we have programs to take care of them medically, psychologically, and to provide social counseling to their families or their villages so that they will be able to be reintegrated in their families.
Though members of the order have good reason to be pleased with the amount of good they are bringing to the remotest parts of the planet, some important challenges do remain.
In this third world and in areas of armed conflicts is the increasing disregard of the humanitarian law and human rights. So armies and rebels more and more target civilian population and do not regard the protection of the helpers. That's something we have to address more loudly in the international society to work against it. In our Western societies, I think the great challenge is to remind people that men are made in the image of God, that they enjoy an untouchable dignity from conception to the natural death. So, for instance, in most countries of Europe, we are expanding our programs for terminal ill people and palliative care to fight by this example the tendency of euthanasia. And I'm concerned about the financial development of the healthcare systems in our societies, which, if it goes on like the tendency is at the moment, in a greater differentiation of care between the rich and the poor, so that the poor have no more the same access to modern and expensive care than others. And that's, I think, something which is not good.
And a very warm thanks there to Albrecht von Boselager, the Grand Hospitaller of the Sovereign Order of the Knights of Malta. In the U.S., preparations are underway in New York to receive Pope Benedict, who's expected to address the United Nations there this April. The Pope is due to go to the UN after visiting faith and political leaders in Washington, D.C. But few people know that Pope Benedict is already in New York City's Harlem neighborhood. No, not physically there, but present nevertheless. Benedict, in fact, is the central figure in a huge 13-foot painting on view at the new National Museum of Catholic Art and History in Harlem.
I just wanted to put it into images, just this incredible presence that the Pope has.
Alfredo, or Fred Villanueva, is the artist who painted the big canvas. He's called it the Holy Theologians. It pictures Pope Benedict surrounded by the figures of saints and doctors of the church.
First of all, we see Jose Maria Escrivá from Spain, and then we see St. Augustine of Hippo after Botticelli, and then we see St. Catherine of Siena, St. John of the Cross, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Thomas Aquinas, St. Bonaventura, St. Irenaeus, St. Gregory, Albertus Magnus, and then Bridget of Sweden.
And if I'm not mistaken, Pope Benedict is pretty much right there in the middle of all of these saints. How does he relate to all these figures?
We know that he's a theologian and he's written much, especially Jesus of Nazareth and the Apostles, two of his books. So we actually read through the books, and he cites a lot of his thinking, and he refers back to these saints. So we regard them that they're all doctors of the church and theologians and writers, that they're influential to his thinking.
But what really makes this painting and this museum so unique is the neighborhood they're located in. Curator of the Catholic Museum, Maria Velia Savino, explains.
We have a lot of Hispanic people here, Italian background and African-American background, you know, everybody here. Harlem is a very colorful neighborhood.
Harlem has long been known for its poverty and high levels of crime, but thanks to tougher policing and increased city development funds in recent years, parts of the neighborhood are undergoing a long overdue renaissance. Still, census data show Harlem continues overall to top the charts of New York's health emergencies, and poverty remains a deep scar in many areas. So, when Christina Cox was given the opportunity to move her small Manhattan-based Catholic museum to an abandoned Catholic school in Spanish East Harlem, she jumped at the chance to help revitalize the area and bring a fresh new look to the neighborhood's Catholic identity. And now, soon after opening to the public, she and the staff are ready to welcome the Pope to New York, and maybe even to Harlem, if he has the chance.
In his honor, we have prepared beautiful artworks, and especially to teach the children about what the Pope is trying to say in his teachings of his new books, The Apostles and Jesus of Nazareth.
How did this project actually come together, and why did you choose one of the most underprivileged areas of New York for this museum?
Well, actually, in 1995, Pope John Paul II had been in New York, and we were then in Olympic Towers next to St. Patrick's, and went from there to Rockefeller Center while we were renting space. We were still looking for a home, and Father Raffano, who was a Palatine priest and the pastor of Our Lady of Mount Carmel Shrine, which basically was erected in 1884 by Pope Leo the 13th, did a papal bull bringing all the Italians up from Little Italy to this area. And Father Raffano was a mentor to me and said, I have this broken down old Catholic school that would make a great museum. And I said, well, Father, I don't know anything about East Harlem and the neighborhood, and I didn't know anything about the shrine and all the miracles and the pilgrimages that have come up here every July 16th for Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So we started to work together. You know, I left that area in Rockefeller Center because space was very expensive, and we began a renovation of $15 million we raised over the last 10 years or so, maybe more, to renovate this old Catholic school with state-of-the-art lighting. And the large galleries. Schools make great museums, you know, because they have the big classrooms and so forth. So we have four floors now and a museum shop, and we're going to be opening up a cafe. And we had St. Lucie's of the from the Bronx came. And afterwards, the children wrote us letters of what they want to see in the museum. And one of their favorite paintings, of course, is this beautiful painting that Fred did of the Pope, because it is so large, it takes up an entire wall. And the children want to get to know him. They want to know about him, and are looking forward to his visit, of course.
Having this museum in the area of Harlem, does that present any unique challenges to you? I mean, it is one of the most underprivileged areas on the East Coast.
Well, all the, you know, whether it's Princess Diana, Mother Teresa, Prince Charles, they all come to Harlem to visit the children here. It did present its challenges, but Harlem is changing now, because when we came up here, anyone who developed between 96th Street and 125th Street was entitled to grants. We got a large grant from the Upper Manhattan Empowerment Zone, where Harlem was being redeveloped. We've gotten a state grant from Governor Pataki in the past. So we were able to write, and you know, for funding and so forth. But Harlem is changing now. And one block away, this summer, opens up Home Depot, Best Buy, and Costco. In fact, Home Depot sponsored our St. Nicholas exhibit for Christmas, where they built an entire Christmas village where we talk about, you know, the Bishop St. Nicholas and how he became Santa Claus. And we get lots of letters from the children about that. It's one of their, especially the little ones, they like that gallery. And then we have a history gallery that starts off with Christopher Columbus bringing Christianity to America, and it goes into the Declaration of Independence, where we talk about Charles Carroll, who is one of the signatures of the Declaration of Independence, and we go into the Irish history of John F. Kennedy's, and we have a beautiful painting of Bishop Sheen, who was up for canonization for a sainthood.
Bishop Sheen is just one of the Catholic heroes kids from East Harlem learn about when they visit the museum. A few of them got on the phone with me to tell me what they liked best and what they had learned about the Pope. It wasn't quite what I was expecting.
My name is Miriam. I'm 13 years old, and I go to Isaac Newton Middle School.
Did you learn anything about Pope Benedict on your visit to the museum?
Yes, that he likes cats and that he likes to write books.
How do you know he likes cats?
Because in one of the pictures, there's a cat under his desk. And I heard that when he walks down the street, that stray cats like to follow him.
What else did you learn about Pope Benedict?
I learned that he really always remembers all the saints. In the picture, he's praying. And in the picture, there's a picture of Mary holding baby Jesus. My favorite part was that they showed a lot of details in the painting and that they help us understand what the painting means.
My name is Tony. I'm 13 years old, and I go to Isaac Newton Middle School. I like the paintings and how we learn about the theologian, about where we got our names from.
Did you see anything or learn anything about Pope Benedict that you didn't know before?
Yes, that he liked cats, and whenever he goes outside, that the stray cats follow him.
Well, the cat's out of the bag. Pope Benedict's fancy for felines has endeared him to kids as far away as New York City.
There is a cat in this painting. I also was fascinated with it. You know, it's sort of a St. Francis thing. It's a love and appreciation for animals as well and everything in God's creation. But there is a cat. He is modeled after a sketch by Leonardo da Vinci. The cat also, in, I think, medieval times, was a revered animal in Italy because it helped ward off the plague, Black Plague. So it's symbolic, I think, for us. But we also know he's a cat lover, and it's very humanizing. I think we could also personalize it as a painting for him as well.
Well, it seems the museum offers a personalized experience for kids of all ages.
Austin, I'm 8 years old and I go to Mount Carmel Holy Rosary School. I learned about Pope and what the Pope to come visit us. My favorite part was the paintings of the Pope.
My name is Stephen, and I see us like from Jesus, the church people, the angels and stuff.
Did I hear you say Yes. Your name is Stephen?
Uh-huh.
How old are you?
Stephen, 7 and a half.
And where do you go to school, Stephen?
River East Elementary School.
Would you like to bring your family back to this museum?
Uh-huh.
What did you like best about it?
I like best when they play their stuff.
Judging from a wide-ranging display of angels, saints, and the Holy Family on hand, Stefflin and Austin certainly get their share of praying and stuff. Maria Velia told me most of the stuff Stefflin was talking about has come to the museum through benefactors, loans, and donations, including a 17th century Dutch masterpiece by Anthony van Dyck.
Also, we have a Spanish masterwork crucifixion. Actually, that was a donation from a Jesuit father that passed away right now. And we have an Epiphany. So we have our own collection of masterworks, and we're starting now to collect contemporary art, because we feel that one of our missions is also to inspire contemporary artists to paint spiritual subjects and religious subjects. We have Latin Americans, Italians, Irish. We are very international in this way. But also we look for quality. So, for example, we have the painting from Henry Bermudez. He represented Venezuela in the Venice Biennale in 1985. So we have a nun from Botero. We have emerging artists. We have a Colombian young artist called Alexis Duque, and he paints very social paintings, and in the same time they are connected with religion, and he paints the stories of barrios. So we want to merge these classical masterworks with contemporary art, and all with the telling of the Holy Scriptures. It's kind of educative at the same time.
Again, it just goes back to the teaching of the children, moral values of what being a Catholic means, and what the Pope is trying to say also in his books is we need to have faith, we need to come back to receiving communion and the ways of the Church. And though we're not trying to evangelize, we are just doing what the Church did long ago. Before people could read, there were paintings, and the paintings told the story of the Bible. And what better way to make someone notice Jesus is to do it through art.
A tremendous satisfaction, because I think first because children really want to learn and they get very impressed about things. And then we feel that when they are seeing so many things in the television that they better they don't see, and suddenly they come here and they are like nourished. And, we feel that we're doing something very good. Even though we are a Catholic museum and our statement and mission is Catholic, we welcome people from other religions to visit our museum, and I think they learn. They're learning things, and also they see us with a different eye after the visit.
Well, our painter Fred Villanueva is certain that visitors to the museum will experience something right out of Pope Benedict's encyclical Spe Salvi, Saved by Hope.
It's kind of a beacon of light and of hope for capturing young minds and inspiring a virtuous way of life.
I'm Tracy McClure, with thanks there to artist Fred Villanueva and Maria Velia Savino and Christina Cox of the Catholic Art and History Museum. And, of course, the kids from East Harlem for contributing to this program. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.